All right. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is a Monday morning, which means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We like to kick off your work week with a joke from my dad. That's later on. We are also going to talk about pet peeves that drive nearly everyone nuts. Also, great rock memoirs and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got some classic Johnny Carson. Johnny Carson Show is on every night on Antenna TV, and I highly recommend it because it's so much fun. And we like to play some clips every morning from the classic Carson, and it's going to be Jonathan Winters and Robin Williams together from 1991. So, and if you want to jump in at any time, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Every Monday morning, at right around this time, Steve Procopi and Eric Childress join me to review the new movies that are now streaming, obviously. Also, we have a couple of always do some genre stuff to give you some suggestions to watch while you're stuck inside. So we're going to talk about animated movies. But let's get the guys on. Here's Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
And Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
All right. How you guys holding up? Eric, how you holding up?
The days are just sort of bleeding one into the next at this point. It just seems like, every week just seems to go by in a flash at this point. Happy that the weather is starting to get a little bit better. There's at least something to look out at, although we've been getting rain for, apparently 40 days and 40 nights at this point.
Yeah.
I'm just keeping as busy as possible to, stay away from the news, basically.
Yeah. How about you, Steve? How you holding up?
All right, up until, this weekend was a little rough. We had a few losses that I really kind of bummed me out big time, especially Lynn Shelton. She was someone that I talked to a few times over the years, and she's just a wonderful, sweet person. I think the reason that hurts the most is because she had decades more to go. Like, literally, she wasn't even close to slowing down, either on TV and film. And, man, just, everyone that's worked with her loved her. And it's just, a tremendous loss for independent film and comedy and dramas. And like I said on Twitter, everything in between is kind of her sweet spot. So, it's a big loss for film in general.
Yeah, and Fred Willard too, man. I love Fred Willard. He's just so great, and he's so funny. And just recently, the stuff that he would do on Kimmel Show, just absolutely hysterical. He knocked it out. He would knock it out of the park every time he would appear on Kimmel.
So, yeah.
Anyway,
we still got stuff from him coming up, though. I mean, he's in Space Force, for God's sake. So. Mm-hmm. And I know he's completed some other projects as well, so we're still going to have a little bit of Fred Willard. But to concur with Steve said about Lynn Shelton, that was a shock. And people need to go and look up her filmography on IMDb because there's some real choice stuff there.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. All right, well, we do have a couple of new movies here that are out. Steve, you're the only one that saw Scoob.
I'm mortified that you guys didn't see this. Okay. So if it's possible for a film to be both too much and yet not enough, that's probably the best way to describe Scoob, the latest studio feature that was originally scheduled to be theatrically released and now is going right to the home streaming route. And much like Trolls World Tour from about a month ago, the thinking behind pushing this film out is that, parents are kind of desperate to give their kids something to do. But I actually think for this film, there's actually more of a chance that the parents are going to sit down and watch it, because I'm guessing a lot of them actually grew up with the Hanna-Barbera series, which started in 1969. The most shocking thing about the film, though, is how little has changed in the Scooby-Doo world since 69. So Scooby, who's voiced by Fred Welker, who's been doing the voice since the early 2000s, I think he was also the original voice of Fred back in the old days, and his best friend Shaggy, who's done by Will Forte here, they still hang out, and they still solve mysteries with Fred, who's Zac Efron, Daphne, who's Amanda Seyfried, and Velma, who's Gina Rodriguez, and they still drive around in the Mystery Machine van and they still solve mysteries with a distinct sort of supernatural element to them. It's beyond me still that no one ever just admits that Shaggy is a hippie stoner who just always has the munchies. But anyway, I thought we might get some of that. This movie's a little more self-aware than we've seen, but not that self-aware. So anyway, the film kind of has a really promising open with a sort of a touching origin story about how Scooby and Shaggy first met when they were both very young, and they connect because neither one of them really had any friends, and they just needed friends. And they also show how they met the rest of the gang and solved their first mystery, and it's really cute. And then it kind of jumps ahead to when the gang is sort of fully in the mystery-solving business. They've already done, like, hundreds of these things. So, but then there's, because this is a feature film, I guess Hanna-Barbera wanted to create something like a shared universe. So some of the other Hanna-Barbera characters come in. Dick Dastardly is the villain. He's voiced by Jason Isaacs, and he's collecting these sort of three rather large dog skulls for some purpose that we don't know. And he wants to kidnap Scooby-Doo in order to stop Dastardly, the superhero Blue Falcon, who's, or more specifically his son, voiced by Mark Wahlberg, snatches up Scooby to protect him, and he has these sidekicks, including Dynamutt, who's Ken Jeong, and Dee Dee Skies, who's Kiersey Clemons. And she seems more interested in being a superhero than even Blue Falcon does, which is kind of funny. And the good guy crew kind of cross paths with Captain Caveman at one point, who's Tracy Morgan. So anyway, he there's a good fight scene with him, but this is a feature debut of Tony Savoni, who has helmed a lot of animated works, including a bunch of Scooby-Doo cartoons. And the film has an energy and a color palette that is both sort of eye-popping and then also very tiring after to sort of amp up things even more. Junkie XL does the score. This is the guy, obviously, that did stuff like more recently, like Sonic the Hedgehog and Alita Battle Angel and the original Deadpool, but of course he also did Mad Max Fury Road, so he's exceedingly talented and in no way subtle. So when we discover that these three dog skulls belong to Cerebus and that bringing them together will open up a gate to hell, Junkie XL's music sort of is the perfect soundtrack for the apocalypse. The story takes its time sometimes to find smaller, more intimate moments, and I think that the film writers have a sense that as long as they keep bringing it back to the friendship between Scooby and Shaggy, that's sort of where things really work. But man, there's a scene at the end that's like a climactic sort of sacrifice scene that feels right out of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. It's a lot heavier than I thought the film was going to get. But man, you know, the meddling kids and the fledgling superhero find the right combination to meet Dastardly head on, and the results are massive and also sort of massively predictable. And as you know, for the most part, the movie feels a little underdeveloped at best and flat out lazy the rest of the time. I'm not attempting to oversell the source material either. The original cartoon wasn't that great either, but at least the animated series had some laughs by sort of playing with and debunking the horror elements. There's a great deal of heart, certainly, in its framework, but not much else to recommend the film. And if you feel like spending $20, you can have it for 2 days. If you feel like spending $25, you can own it for the rest of your life, or at least the rest of your life of your computer. So,
okay. All right. There you go. All right, you guys, hang on a second. Eric and Steve are here. We got more movies to review, and then we'll tell you about some animated movies that you can watch while you're stuck at home right here on 720 WGN.
Every day the sun comes up around her, she can
right.
Make the birds sing harmony.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're going to be talking about great rock memoirs and pet peeves that drive everybody crazy. And we'll get some classic Johnny Carson to play back. It's going to be Jonathan Winters and Robin Williams together. And that's going to be probably less than insane. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. Steve Procopi and Eric Childress join me every week to review the new movies, and we're also going to tell you about some animated movies that you can stream while you're stuck at home, giving you some suggestions on how to fill that time and watch some stuff while you're at home. Let's get Eric back in here. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
And Steve.
Hey there.
All right. Eric, tell us about Castle in the Ground.
Okay. This is a film that stars Alex Wolff as a teenager who's been taking care of his deathly ill mother, played by Neve Campbell. And one day in the middle of getting one of her prescriptions at the pharmacy, he meets a young woman played by Imogen Poots, who's clearly on the bad portion of addiction as far as opioids are concerned. She's a bit of a hustler, you know, trying to score free stuff to feed her addiction and whatnot, and they begin forming a connection between the two of them. But as his mother does eventually die, he then starts digging into her stash as well, and he begins his journey towards addiction to opioids as well. That's pretty much where the story sort of kind of rests, and how these two characters are the relationship sort of goes in this direction that involves further hustling and possibly even more dangerous territories. This is a film that I think, it was a film directed by an actor named Joey Klein. He's written and directed a few movies, including one that we played at our Chicago Critics Film Festival a few years ago called The Other Half with Tatiana Maslany and Tom Cullen, that I think is really good. Tom Cullen shows up in this movie as well. And the movie is sort of has a kind of a two halves to it, in a way that the main storyline involving Alex Wolff, I think, is actually the far less defined aspect of it, which is kind of a issue, given that it's the main thrust into the story. I never quite bought into just how quickly he went down the road that he eventually does. His connection to the Imogen Poots character, I bought into hook, line, and sinker, precisely because Imogen Poots' performance is really quite good in this movie, and then you can see how someone vulnerable like him would be attracted to this mess, this real hot mess of a person. And then Tom Cullen shows up about two-thirds of the way of the movie and almost just steals the entire movie, a real just great, just mysterious, dangerous performance late in the film. So it's a film that I'm a bit mixed on, but I'm leaning towards the positive because I really like the performances of Poots and Cullen. I think the second half works quite well. So a little bit of a mixed bag, but I'm giving it a recommendation. Sort of a bleak, dire film to be sure, but a pretty good one.
Okay, all right. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Imogen Poots, he has this high-wire performance here that instantly makes you realize two things. One is that if you give her character anything, she's going to ask for 10 more things. And there is no way that this kid is going to be able to resist falling into the web of her life. And she seems like a well-meaning person most of the time, but she seems also to be manufactured to cause trouble. And it all comes back from this need to score drugs. And it should be noted that the film's actually set in 2012. So it wants to make it crystal clear that this is sort of when Oxycontin, which is the main drug here, is being taken off the market by the manufacturer, and it leads to this like flood of fake oxy, and like which then of course leads to ODs and the beginning of this really spiraling opioid epidemic. And this is not a message film, but it does sort of dive deep into the psyches of these two lead characters and expose how oxy just destroyed lives long, like even before it was largely unavailable. The film's kind of exhausting sometimes, but I think it's a very believable tale of lives in decline, and it's maybe not an easy film to endure, but as a raw acting exercise, both Poots and Wolf and Cullen, too, are so good that it might just be easier to lose yourself in the performances and ignore sort of the misery that surrounds them, which is not easy. But, I actually like this, I think, a little bit more than Eric did.
Okay. All right. That's Castle in the Ground, which is available to stream right now. Okay. I'm a big fan of Alex Wolff.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, he was unbelievable in Hereditary. But I'm a big fan of him. I think he does great stuff. All right, Steve, tell us about Capone.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Back in the 1990s and the early 2000s, I used to have this day job that required me to travel around a lot in the world. And no matter where I went, when you told people you were from Chicago, they said one of two things, or maybe both. One was Michael Jordan, and one was Al Capone. And I think it's kind of funny that both of those people are sort of back in the spotlight right now, to varying degrees. And so this film Capone is a sort of a weird, trippy, twisted biography of the final, very undignified year in a life of gangster Al Capone, who's played by Tom Hardy, who inhabits every grotesque aspect of the man during that time. It's written and directed by Josh Trank, who helmed one of what I think is one of the better found footage films, Chronicle, as well as one of the worst superhero movies ever made, The Fantastic Four. The movie sort of captures the supposed experience of being inside Al Capone's syphilitic brain, including delusions caused by rapidly advancing dementia. Al is visited by the spirits of those he once cared about, those who betrayed him, and those he wronged in various ways. Meanwhile, his body is literally rotting from the inside, and there are, let's say, outward manifestations of this that involve every type of bodily fluid and all the accompanying odors. I thank the gods every day that this movie was not a scratch and sniff movie. That's all I'm saying. But in addition to these many sort of imagined visitors, Al Capone's paranoia is heightened by the very real presence of FBI agents watching him and listening to him. They're led by Jack Loudon, who was in Fighting with My Family and also was with Hardy in Dunkirk. And they're spying on him. And there's a sort of a shifty physician that sees Capone, is played by Kyle MacLachlan, who's doing a bit of snooping himself. And they're all sort of attempting to see if they can find out if Capone hid a stash of money somewhere before he went to jail for tax evasion, and they're kind of hoping he'll blurt something out in one of his episodes. But he's also attended to by his very loving wife, who's played by Linda Cardellini. He has a grown son who's living with him, and he also fends off these sort of ghostly visions of long-gone friends, including a fellow gangster and close friend played by Matt Dillon. He's not really deemed a threat anymore, but he was allowed to sort of live out the last years of his life in this sort of lavish Florida mansion. But money problems sort of force him to sell a lot of his possessions, so there's this metaphor of him losing pieces of his mind while he's also losing pieces of his house, and that it's a little heavy-handed, but it's there. The performance itself, I mean, it feels like Hardy barely even uses recognizable words most of the time, let alone entire sentences. He's almost more animal than human at this point. He's sort of just grunting and squirming and sweating and decomposing, and it reminded me, a lot of people have different ideas, but it reminded me of what Danny DeVito did as the Penguin, certainly not what Robert De Niro did in The Untouchables. But it's a performance that is both admirable and repulsive, and you know, Hardy is a master craftsman. He's giving us an exaggerated, primal, still very plausible portrait of this once powerful man whose brain is turning to mush and his memories are sort of violently blending together of his glory days and the ugly realities of his present day. I don't get a sense that Trank is particularly concerned with capturing truth here, but maybe some of what's here is based in fact. I don't really know. A lot of it doesn't feel very real, but it doesn't mean it's not good. If we don't have enough reasons to feel like we want to use hand sanitizer these days, Capone is sort of a rough and slimy work that will make you feel unclean for watching it. Again, not necessarily a bad thing, but if you can stomach the occasional moments of blood and incontinence, you might actually appreciate what Trank and Hardy are attempting to do. I was on board. I was mostly on board.
Okay. All right. Hang on, guys. Mm-hmm. When we get back, Eric will tell us what he thought of Capone right here on 720 WGN. Right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline studio here on a Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Eric Childress and Steve Procopi join me every Monday morning to review new movies. And also now, since we're all stuck inside, we're giving you some ideas about what you can binge watch. This week, we're going to be talking about some animated movies that you can watch while you're stuck at home. Here's Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Steve. Hi.
Hello.
All right. Before the break, Steve told us what he thought of Capone with Tom Hardy. And Eric, what did you think?
Yeah, you know, beyond the sort of the general unpleasantness of watching this movie and watching the performance that Tom Hardy gives in this movie, I just kept finding myself asking the same questions, like, what exactly possessed Josh Trank to do this version of the Capone story or the Capone legend or however you want to do it? The only thing I could think of is that his ancestors were wronged in some way by Capone, because it's just this complete emasculation of this guy that, which I'm all for, given what an evil monster this guy was. I'm all for, his humiliation, but we're talking about film here, and there has to be some sort of general context for why you're doing the story of a syphilitic Alphonse Capone after he's been released from jail. I mean, everyone knows it's like we're asked to sort of bring our own ideas of the legend and the stories we've heard and the tidbits we've heard over the years and other movies even, and then sort of assume that that's going to fill in the blanks for why we're watching Al Capone go a little crazy and, create bathroom stains all over the place, which he does on at least three occasions in this movie, and then chew a carrot wildly and things like that. And like Tom Hardy's performance, I mean, first of all, looking at Tom Hardy in this movie, it's like watching the late stage Jake LaMotta and Raging Bull on the last stage of a zombie infection. That's what it's like watching him, and his voice is the voice that he does. And Hardy is known for doing weirdo voices, even when he's not really called to do those kind of voices. And here, the only voice I could think of sounds exactly like Princess Leia's bounty hunter in Return of the Jedi, and he does that for almost two straight hours, and it's so hard to listen to. And the entire movie, I'm like, what is the point of this? Why are we watching this guy go through this? And what does this add to his story, other than he, because I think Steve is right, that I don't think that Trank is dealing in reality, but his idea of a non-truth and the sort of this fantasy and these sort of flights of nightmarish fancy that he only occasionally goes through in the movie don't add up to anything, really. And even the stuff with the FBI doesn't add any great drama to it. Someone asked me the other night, what was the worst movie that I've seen during quarantine? I now have an answer for them.
Oh. Okay. All right. Well, that's Capone. That's available if you want to watch that. It's available. All right. Now, we're all stuck inside, so every week now we're coming up with like different genres and throwing a bunch of titles at you that you might want to watch. So we're going to talk about animated films today. So, Steve, let's start with you.
Mm-hmm.
These titles that you're picking here are all available on Netflix. Let's start with Monster mm-hmm. House, which is such a great movie.
How many animated films are there that are also horror movies and that are effective horror movies? There are a few. Tim Burton got involved in a couple, but Monster House is just like, it's both sort of a great film. I think kids will love it, but I also think there's like there's stuff that's scary in here, and it's like a great haunted house story that actually I think has improved over the years. Just about this group of kids who go into this creaky old house and all the fun that they have and getting scared. I mean, it's just a tremendous little film.
It is. It's a wonderful movie.
Yeah.
I really love that movie. It's available on Netflix. All right, Eric, your first choice from Netflix is Incredibles 2.
Yeah, and I brought this up for a couple reasons. One, for those who still don't have Disney Plus, here's a Pixar film that is available on your Netflix account. And two, even though this was a movie with a gigantic hit, it seems like it's one that people tend to seem to dismiss a little bit, in the same way like Finding Dory, people are just like, yeah, it's fine. I thought Incredibles 2 was really, really terrific, and what I liked about it so much, beyond how funny the baby is in the movie, is that it's mostly about the mom character.
Yeah.
It's about Elastigirl. I thought that was a great way to approach this movie. I thought the movie was terrific.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's great. I think it's great. All right, Steve, you got The Princess and the Frog.
Yeah, I mean, this was about 10 years ago. Disney introduced us to Tiana, the first African-American Disney princess, set in New Orleans in the early 20th century, and it centers on her, this woman who wants to be, open her own restaurant, but she gets sidetracked by sort of this version of the frog prince that is sort of instigated by a voodoo curse, and I just love the old school hand-drawn Disney animated feel. It's one of the last times they did something like this, and then the jazz-infused songs, and it just feels different. It doesn't adhere to the Disney princess formula entirely, and I think at the time, certainly, it was much appreciated and much needed.
Okay. Let's see. Eric, your next one is Tarzan.
Yeah, released in 1999, it was 5 years after Elton John got the keys to create an entire soundtrack for The Lion King, and this one, my boy Phil Collins, got an opportunity to do the soundtrack and won an Oscar for it. I've always think that this is a very underrated, that's sort of the traditional Disney animated films. It's exciting, it's funny. I personally like the songs, and I think it's one that people don't tend to talk about this one, but I think it's one that needs to be rediscovered.
Okay, that's Tarzan, and that's available on Netflix. Let's do two from you, Steve, since you got mm-hmm. you have a few more choices here than Eric. This next one is another movie that I absolutely love, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. What a surprise.
I mean, it won the Oscar this year, so
yeah.
It's not that much of a surprise, but it is, or wait, was it this year or last year. So, it's not just like a visually stunning storytelling style that is sort of the perfect complement to the Miles Morales origin story of his Spider-Man, but like, it kind of, and I, as much as I like most of the Marvel movies, this one kind of put all of those to shame in a lot of ways, and lots of audiences probably met Miles for the first time in this movie, and I can't think of a better way to meet this compelling character. It also introduced this idea of a multiverse, which is going to, I think, be used in the live-action films as well. And it just revealed all these, I mean, how can you not love all these other spider people from all these other, like Nicolas Cage as a noir version of Spider-Man and John Mulaney as this Spider-Ham? I mean, it's just like, it's such a great combination, and it's hard not to be hyperbolic when you're talking about this movie, but it's also hard to, you almost have to overstate how good it is because it is that good. So,
yeah, it's a great movie. I mean, yeah. I was completely surprised at how much I loved it. It came out of nowhere. All right, what about I Lost My Body?
Yeah, this was another one that was Oscar nominated this year. And it literally is about a cut off hand. It's a French film about a cut off hand that escapes from a dissection lab, and all it wants to do is get back to the body that it came from. And so you see that adventure of the hand going through Paris to find its body, but then you also get these sort of flashback memory things from the hand of how the person that the hand was attached to got to the point where it was, the hand was dissected. So, It's a genius idea for a movie, but it's a really beautiful, the animation's gorgeous, it's a moving story. I know it sounds weird and creepy on the surface, and it's definitely more of a meditation on humanity and what it means to be like a whole person than it is any kind of gross out thing, but it's a really shockingly great movie.
Wow. Okay. I'm really curious.
If you got screeners from Netflix last year, you got this movie.
Okay. All right. So. Well, all right. There we go. All right, Eric, Polar Express.
Yeah, Robert Zemeckis, and the first of his foray into animation. I always tend to turn a deaf ear when people complain about the creepiness of the animation. I've never bought into that personally, and I've always thought that this is a really beautiful film that celebrates the original storybook that it came from. Tom Hanks is having a lot of fun playing multiple characters, and I find the movie to be really beautiful and very moving.
Mm-hmm. I like it too. Well, because the name Zemeckis is attached to it, so that's kind of goes
with
the territory.
It's also creepy. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Steve, B movie.
Yeah, I mean, like, how it's actually kind of shocking how long it took Jerry Seinfeld to get into the animation game. I don't think this is a great movie, but when I saw it on the list, I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about that. His comedy, especially his stand-up comedy, has always been fairly family friendly. So why would it not lend itself to something like this story of a bee that wants to, you know, goes out into the world and meets a human, actually talks to a human, played by Renee Zellweger, and he sort of breaks the rules a little bit, but then he finds out that humans are stealing and eating honey and have been for centuries, and he gets all up in arms and wants justice for his lost honey. And I think it's hilarious, and there's some really great turns in here by Matthew Broderick and Chris Rock and Patrick Warburton, and of course Ray Liotta as himself. So
I completely forgot about this movie.
Yeah.
I completely forgot about it. And I remember liking it. I haven't seen it since it came out, but I remember liking it.
Yeah.
So, all right, you guys hang on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Eric and Steve are here, and we'll come back and talk more animated movies that you can stream right now while you're stuck at home, giving you some suggestions on what to watch. All right? Okay. 312-981-7200. Right. Morning, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We've got more stuff coming up here. We're going to be talking about pet peeves that drive everybody nuts, great rock memoirs, and we've got classic Johnny Carson with Jonathan Winters and Robin Williams from 1991 that's what we're going to play back. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. We've got Eric and Steve here. And welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, Eric, let's go back to you. We're talking about animated movies that people should see. And, man, this next one is just such an underrated and underseen movie. Looney Tunes back in action. I love this movie.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, I mean, this is a little bit of a cheat given a combination of live action and animation, but anything I can do to steer more people to this movie. I mean, this is Joe Dante's absolutely lovingly, you know, a loving attempt to sort of rebrand the Looney Tunes after they got Space Jammed. And it's just, the result is just a complete, just encapsulation of references, you know, not just animation, but also science fiction. Steve Martin, absolutely hilarious in this movie. This is a movie that more people need to see, and, you know, we got to get Joe Dante working again.
Yeah. Yeah, Looney Tunes back in action. I just can't believe it has not gone down as a classic. I mean, I just think it's great, and nobody went to see it when it came out. So, which is really a shame. But you got a chance to see it now. Looney Tunes Back in Action is on Netflix. Here is Mark on WGN. Hey, Mark.
Yeah, is Chicken Run available to stream? That's a
good cartoon, full of good humor.
Yes, it is, Mark. It's available on Hulu.
One implied pun in there. The chicken husband is kind of trampled and downtrodden by his wife, but the movie never uses the word henpecked.
Right, right. That's true. That's true. All right, Mark, thanks. It is available. It's on Hulu.
Right. Thank you.
All right. There you go. That's a great movie, too.
Great movie.
Yeah, I love that movie. Okay. Disney Plus. Steve, you went with one that nobody has really heard of. Fantasia.
Yeah, I mean, you know, take your pick from the different versions, but the original one is the one I always go back to. I mean, it's an absolute masterpiece. In my estimation, might be the greatest animated film ever made. But it's a celebration of sight and music, and it features 8 sequences marrying classical music with really innovative animation, even for today. Obviously, the Sorcerer's Apprentice story with Mickey Mouse is probably the most famous, but man, there's the one that got me as a kid, and this is one of the first films I ever saw, let alone animated films, the Night on Bald Mountain with this thing that looked a lot like the devil and his minions shows up, and I, as a little kid, was freaked out by that, and I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
And it literally, you know, you're literally watching music come to life here, and I can't think of anything cooler.
Yeah, it's such a great film.
Yeah.
Okay, from Disney Plus, Eric, one of my favorites, Inside Out.
Yeah, my favorite Pixar film is actually on Steve's list, but this one is right up there and probably easily in my top 5. Pixar has been doing all these sequels, and we mentioned Incredibles 2, obviously the Toy Story films, but this is the kind of film that made us fall in love with Pixar in the first place, and it was such a audacious concept that they pulled off beautifully, and it only, you know, makes us wish that, you know, the Soul, which is from the creators of Inside Out, was going to be coming out in June. We're going to have to wait till November for that one, but I'm hoping that that's going to sort of rekindle our love for original Pixar films, and Inside Out is an all-timer.
It is, and I can't tell you the number of times I've seen it, and just every time I watch it, I cry like a baby.
Yeah.
It's just so good. It's so good.
I'll say that trailer for Soul almost made me cry the first time I saw it.
Yeah,
the long one.
I know, I can't. It's going to be great. All right, and then, Steve, the next one is my favorite Pixar movie.
Yeah, mine too, and that's, I mean, Wally is, I mean, he's just, spends his days tidying up the earth, one little cube of garbage at a time, and he's been doing it for hundreds of years. Weirdly enough, his favorite movie, his only movie that he watches is Hello, Dolly, which I just saw in 70mm before everything shut down, but then he meets another robot and sort of falls in love, but the stuff that haunts me and the stuff that people reference about this film is the back half where we meet the humans finally, and anytime anyone invents something that is supposed to make our lives easier and make it less necessary to go outside, and thank goodness people have done that, because otherwise we'd have a really hard time right now, people really like go back to this movie and talk about the sort of gelatinous blobs that humans have become. And so that's the stuff that, even though I thought this, you know, we kind of looked at it and laughed at it when it came out, now we're not laughing as hard. But it's still pretty great.
Yeah. I love that. I love Wally. I really just love it. All right. Eric, from Disney Plus, you got Frankenweenie.
Yeah, Steve brought up Tim Burton earlier, and this is a film that I think of the latter half of his career might be his best work. I mean, a black and white animated film, full length version of his, you know, sort of the short film that got him noticed. It is, you know, the combination, the great combination of heart and the macabre that Tim Burton, you know, sort of excelled at in the first part of his career is so much on display here. This is another very underappreciated, latter animated film that I want more people to discover.
Yeah, it's a great movie. All right, from Hulu, Steve, you're picking Sausage Party.
Well, of course I am. I am excited as heck that anytime somebody makes an adult-oriented animated thing, because that doesn't happen that often, and there's exactly the kind of movies I snuck into when I was too young to see them. And, I mean, Sausage Party, hey, it's the classic love story of a sausage and a bun. So, and, you know, it's a great, like, sort of bigger picture thing that when the food finds out what happens to it when it leaves the grocery store, which they, you know, they don't know, and they find out and they're horrified. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I love stuff like that. It's so great, and it's just sort of defiantly and blissfully R-rated.
Okay, and then Eric, for Disney Plus, you got Zootopia.
Yeah, I mean, this was a huge hit. Another, you know, sort of traditional animated Disney animated film that, you know, has such a. It's a great mystery. It's a great detective story. Great voice work by Jason Bateman and Jennifer Goodwin in it. But also, you know, a really great message about, you know, sort of racism and maybe even a little gentrification and stuff like that. It's a real uplifting film with some huge laughs in it. The big scene in the middle with the, you know the scene I'm talking about is so funny.
Yeah.
And people, this is a terrific movie.
Yeah, it is. It's great. It's great. All right, we mentioned Chicken Run.
Mm-hmm.
What about Rango?
This movie is crazy. It's about a chameleon that's played by Johnny Depp who lives a sheltered life, but then he goes out and he ends up being the sheriff in this small town called Dirt, and there's all these other animals there, and there's like a whole, like, it's sort of part Western and part Chinatown remake, and it's just so weird. And the fact that Gore Berbinsky directed it makes it even just a little bit weirder. A supreme cast, and a really sort of one of the most delightful films about imposter syndrome I've ever seen.
Okay. Prince of Egypt is on Hulu, Eric.
Yeah, we're past Easter now, but you know, an animated version basically of the Ten Commandments that I really liked. You know, DreamWorks was just sort of finding their voice of an animation at the time, and you know, compared to that Ridley Scott garbage that we got a few years ago, this is the more modern take of the Moses story that I'd rather people take a look at.
All right. From iTunes, Steve, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, same.
Kubo and the Two Strings, truly one of my favorite movies ever.
I mean, just Charlize Theron, Matthew McConaughey, Ralph Fiennes, it's mystical, it's magical, the music's beautiful, and I don't think it's just one of the best animated films in the last 10 years, but maybe one of the best films, period, in the last 10 years. So,
agreed.
Yeah,
agreed.
It's tremendous.
It's impossible to measure my love for this movie.
And the fact that it didn't win the Oscar is horrifying to me.
Ridiculous. So. All right, let's fly through some of these titles since we're running out of time here. Eric, The Ant Bully.
Yeah, with Nicolas Cage voice work.
Yeah.
Movie that so many people have forgotten that I've even forgotten the entire plot of this movie.
Yeah.
I just remember thinking it was really funny.
Akira, which is, you know, classic.
The movie that put anime on the map, for the mainstream.
Going with Lego Movie 2.
Underrated. I think that, you know, this movie didn't do as well as the original Lego movie, but I think this has a real sort of dark streak in it, and some real interesting lessons for kids and adults in it.
Steve, The Iron Giant.
Yeah, I mean, just it's a boy and his robot story, and also one of the most heartfelt, devastating anti-war films ever made.
Agreed. Prime Video. These are available. South Park, man, please, bigger, longer, and uncut.
It's funny, it's vulgar, it's loud, and it has an amazing soundtrack.
Yeah, no, it's one of my favorite movie musicals of all time.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. My Neighbor Totoro?
Totoro. You can't have an animated list without a little Miyazaki on it. I mean, he's maybe the greatest director of animation ever, and this is kind of the prototype thing. It's a pure artistry, imagination, and heart, and it's all Miyazaki, so yeah.
Okay. And then finally, the Lego Batman movie.
Yeah, I mean, this is the best Lego movie. So I like that it's a little more focused than the other two Lego movies, and it's just so funny in the way it's self-aware and it's poking fun of the superhero genres and itself. And yeah, no, I think it's tremendously funny.
And it's a really fun movie. All right, well, that's cool. So we got a bunch of animated titles that we just threw at you, so you got no excuse. You can watch a bunch of really cool stuff. All right, you guys, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week, okay?
All right.
Okay, see you later. There you go. There's Eric and Steve, and they'll be back again next week to talk about the new movies and to give you some suggestions on what else to watch if we're still stuck inside. So that's it right here on 720 WGN.